I want you to think about someone that loves you. And immediately, usually what will come to your mind is an image, a face. You know, it might be a father, a mother. A lot of times it's a husband or a wife. Could be a friend. It could be a brother, a sister, a daughter, a son. But it almost automatically, we attach a face to it when I ask you to think about someone that loves you. And I think one of the reasons it's difficult for us to understand the love of God is because we can't necessarily attach a face to God. I mean, I know that there are pictures that have been drawn of Jesus, but they don't do him any justice at all. We know that Christ never stood for someone to draw a picture of him. I think one of the reasons it's difficult to understand the love of God is we can't necessarily see God's face. You know, sometimes people will say, well, God doesn't love me. And if we could see his face, if we could see his face of acceptance or approval, and sometimes maybe a face of disappointment when you mess up, that it might be a more powerful understanding or might draw us closer to God. Have you ever had an experience or an act of love given to you and you didn't even know the person's name or where it came from for sure? Someone did something for you and it really, you wonder, where'd that come from? I know several months ago, Rebecca wrecked her vehicle and totaled it. And of course, the police officer came and she got a ticket for not keeping her side of the road. She crossed over the other lane and hit a car. So someone else was involved. And so she had a court date. And we were sort of worried about that. We didn't know what would happen because it did involve another car. We didn't know for sure what would happen. So Teresa and Rebecca went to court and they went there. And they said it was basically, I forget the word they use, annulled or... And we thought, well, man, you know, that's pretty good there, that you didn't have to, there was nothing else from that point. And I told Rebecca, I said, well, you've just experienced grace. you've just experienced an act of love given to you, you know. There's another story that Ron Dart told about a couple in the church who was a poor couple. They had a new child on the way, and they needed a washer and dryer. One day the couple were outside on their porch and all of a sudden here comes a Sears truck up and says, we've got a new washer and dryer. And they said, well, we didn't order anything like that. And they said, well, it just says it's been paid for, it's yours. Well, who gave that to? Well, we don't know. It's here and it's yours. Take it. And they never knew who gave that to them. It was an act of love, and they really didn't know where it came from. I think we have that happen to us a lot more than we care to admit. In Matthew 6 and verse 3, Jesus said this. He says, but when you do your merciful deeds, do not let your left hand know what your right hand does, so that your merciful deeds may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret himself shall reward you openly. Don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. And again, there was another occasion in Matthew 8. There was a large crowd, and a leper came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. If it's your will, I know you have the power, it's just a matter of your will. And Jesus put out his hand and touched him and said, I'll do it. Be clean. Jesus said to the man, after he was cleansed, he said a strange thing. He said, see that you tell no one. Don't tell anyone. It's a strange thing, and I'm not sure I can quite understand it, but it's almost as if the act and power of love is diminished when we attach either a face or a name to it. It's a strange thing, because I mean, here Jesus said, you know, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. And then after this fabulous miracle, he says, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. A question I want us to think about is, when we love God in return, does God attach a face to us? I mean, does God look down and say, oh, there's David, I see David, and he's trying to love me? Is it necessary to attach a face, or is the power and act of love that we give to God enough? There's a danger that our motivation for loving another or God can be self-centered. It can be all about me. I want to look at 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 1. And I want us to notice, I'm just going to read three verses here, and I want us to notice these I statements. It sort of reminds me of the I statements back in Isaiah, where Satan is saying, I will ascend above the clouds of heaven. I will I will be greater than God. All the I statements, just I. Well, here it says, though I speak with the tongues of men and angels and have not love, I become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have prophecy and understanding and all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith that I could move mountains, but I don't have love, I am nothing. And though I give all my goods to feed the poor, and though I deliver my body to be burned and have not love, it profits me nothing. All the little me, I statements. Because I mean, one thing's for sure is if you have, as it says here, the gifts of tongues of the men and angels, a lot of people are going to be looking to you as a spiritual guru, you know. If you have a prophecy, I mean, all you got to do is come up with some kind of end-time prophecy and you can have masses of people looking to you. What is easy to overlook is that our motivation for loving can be self-centered. Our motivation for loving others or God, our motivation for loving is not in the pure act of love, but in the recognition that we get. The recognition. In other words, I am recognized as a loving person. Won't you please see that? The recognition. And the truth of the matter is, a pure act of love desires, get this, a pure act of love desires no recognition, no fanfare, no acknowledgement. If you ever want to know if you've been involved in a pure act of love, there's your little test. No recognition, no fanfare, no acknowledgement. It's almost as if love is a secret, mysterious force in life that can exist internally inside of us human beings, but is best expressed without any fanfare or acknowledgement. I was listening to a sermon by Brent Kearns just recently, and he tells a little story about a husband that comes home, and he comes home to a house that's just chaos and confusion. The front door is open, the children are outside playing in their pajamas in the mud. The car door is open, and he walks through the door. The door is open, and the carpet, the welcome mat, is all scrunched up against the wall, and he walks through, and he steps over toys, and he walks by the kitchen, and there's bowls of cereal. It's still in the bowl, and the milk is, and he's thinking, what in the world? This is, what's going on here? Maybe there's something wrong with my wife. And he goes upstairs. And of course, it's about 5 o'clock in the evening, and he goes upstairs, and his wife is lying in bed, reading a book, drinking a hot cup of cocoa. And he says, what's wrong? I mean, what's the chaos and confusion all about? And she says, you know, all those days, every evening you come home and you ask me, what in the world have you been doing? Well, today I didn't do it. You know, the husband that does not recognize pure acts of love is a fool. I once heard a story about the magic sock drawer. The husband came home and he couldn't figure out why he had this magic sock drawer. Every time he opened it up, there were socks folded, and you know, it never went empty. Do we realize pure acts of love when they come our way? More importantly, do we recognize pure acts of love from God? You know, without recognition, without acknowledgement, they just multiply daily in our lives. In fact, Psalms 68 and verse 19 will say, "Blessed be the Lord who daily loadeth us with benefits." Even the God of our... daily loads us with benefits. Are we quiet enough? Are we listening, watching all the pure acts of love that God sends us daily? I want to read you a little story. And it was just something about the end of the story that caught my attention. A little phrase here that I'll touch on. It says, Susan didn't know what was wrong with Grandma. She was always forgetting things like where she put the sugar and when to pay the bills and what time to be ready to be picked up for the grocery shopping. What's wrong with Grandma? Susan asked. She used to be such a neat lady. Now she looks sad and lost and doesn't remember things. Well, Grandma's just getting old, Mother said. She needs a lot of love right now. Well, what's it like to get old? Susan asked. Does everybody forget things? Will I forget? Well, not everyone forgets things when they get old. We think Grandma may have Alzheimer's disease and that makes her forget more. We may have to put her into a nursing home to get the proper care she needs. Oh, Mother, that's terrible. She'll miss her own little house so much. Well, maybe, but there isn't much else we can do. She'll get good care there and make some new friends. Susan looked sorrowfully. She didn't like the idea at all. Can we go and see her often? She asked. I'll miss talking to Grandma, even if she does forget things. Well, we can go on weekends, Mother said. We can take her presents, like ice cream. Grandma loves strawberry ice cream. Susan smiled. Strawberry ice cream it is, Mother said. The first time they visited Grandma in the nursing home, Susan wanted to cry. Mother, almost all the people are in wheelchairs, she said. They have to be, otherwise they'd fall, Mother explained. Now, when you see Grandma smile and tell her how nice she looks, Grandma sat all by herself in a corner of the room they called the sun parlor. She sat looking at all the trees. Susan hugged Grandma. Look, she said, we brought your presents, your favorite strawberry ice cream. Grandma took the Dixie cup and the spoon and began eating without saying a word. But she doesn't seem to know us. Susan was disappointed. You have to give her time, Mother said. She's in a new surrounding and she has to make an adjustment. But the next time they visited Grandma, it was the same way. She ate the ice cream and smiled at them, but didn't say anything. Grandma, do you know who I am? Susan said. Well, you're the girl that brings me ice cream, Grandma said. Yes, but I'm Susan, too, your granddaughter. Don't you remember me? Throwing her arms around the old lady, Grandma smiled faintly. Remember? Sure, I remember. You're the girl that brings me ice cream. Suddenly, Susan realized Grandma would never remember her. Grandma was living in a world all her own, in a world of shadowy memories and loneliness. Oh, how I love you, Grandma, she said. Just then, she saw a tear roll down Grandma's cheek. Love, she said. I remember love. You see, dear, that's all she wants, Mother said. Love. Well, I'll bring her ice cream every weekend then and hug her even if she doesn't remember me, Susan said. After all, that was more important, to remember love rather than someone's name. To remember love rather than someone's name. And that little phrase sort of stuck in my mind, the concept of remembering acts of love rather than someone's name. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever should believe in him should not perish but have everlasting life. You know, I've never seen God's face. In fact, the scripture says, you've neither heard his voice at any time nor seen his shape. I do know his name. I do know my Savior's name, but this little phrase comes back to me, to remember love rather than someone's name, to remember the pure acts of love that God has given us, because there's no mistake in that. You can't misread, misinterpret that. You know, when a loved one dies, it's not so much the face that we remember. I'm convinced that's why we have the pictures on the wall, you know, so we can remember. Have you ever been looking at a high school album, and it's been about 10 years since you've looked at it, and you open it up and you think, oh, I remember that person. You know, the reason you do that is because you've forgotten that person. You forgot that face. You know, you don't, it's easy to forget a face. It's easy to forget a face. But you know, the pure acts of love we never forget. We never forget. We never forget the small personal sacrifices. We never forget the giving of self, the time spent together, the intimacy, the instruction, the correction, listening to each other. Those things we never forget. Now, I asked earlier, I said, you know, when we love God in return, does God attach a face to us? Is it necessary? Or is the power and act of love enough for God? You know, we live in a society where there is this obsession with appearances, I think. But let's notice what in the Bible what God really notices about you and me. In Psalms 139 and verse 1, what's important to God? Psalms 139 and verse 1. It says, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know of my down sittings and my uprising. You understand my thoughts afar off. In other words, you know when I get up and you know when I go to bed. You know what I'm thinking about. Fascinating. You compass my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. In other words, you know all my ways. You know what I'm made of. For as there is not a word in my tongue, but, O Lord, you know it altogether. In other words, you know every word I say. You hear every word I say. Thou hast been behind and before and laid thy hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it. Whether shall I go from thy spirit, or whether shall I go from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost part of the sea, even there shall your hand lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. In other words, locality doesn't matter. Wherever you go, there, God is there. You can't run. I remember as a teenager, I used to think I had to get away. I remember talking to Barry. I said, well, you know, we just need to get away. We need to go to the beach. We need, you know, I guess as a teenager, I thought I had problems. You know, and I thought, I need to get away from my problems. We need to get away. But I found out a very important truth early in life is that when you get away, you take your problems with you. You know, you whatever your problems are here, that's what they'll be there. Notice verse 11. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. In other words, God sees in the dark. And what he sees is not so much as our faces, but the pure acts of love that we give in return to God. He sees what we're thinking about. And that has a lot, what you think about has a lot to do with the pure acts of love that you give back to God. He sees the way we are going. And the decisions that we make on a daily basis and the directions that we go has a lot to do with the pure acts of love that we give to God. And he hears every word we say, and he looks upon the heart. Jesus will say, if you love me, keep my commandments. If you love me, keep my commandments. You know, I believe that God sees differently than we see ourselves. I entitled this message in closing, The Face of Love. And I wanted to illustrate that love does not always have to have a face connected with it. It is the act and power of love that we should be impressed with, not the face. And I want to illustrate that our desire for recognition that we are a loving person is not always good. That the act of and power of love speaks for itself. For God so loved the world. I mean, that speaks for itself. The act and power of love. And I guess in preparing this, I thought that, you know, without love, we would be just another face in the crowd that goes totally unnoticed by God.